Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
So this morning, we started off by having a really good conversation. We talked about some important things in our lives. We talked about things that we value. We talked about goals.
This was prior to us recording.
Yeah. We really got down to it. We talked about how we know ourselves, and we talked about some of our vulnerabilities and our strengths too. And we were honest with each other and open in ways that I wouldn't be with 95% of other people. And it just came natural. And that's because we have a relationship that supports that. We're lucky to have that.
Yeah.
We built that up since we were 9 years old.
Eight
years old.
Don't be a liar, Dave.
And we're fortunate. We're fortunate in those regards to have that intimacy. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Intimacy. This is random, but it popped in my head. And it goes back to my days during COVID when I was volunteering, answering those crisis hotlines for folks that were thinking about suicide, having suicidal thoughts. And I learned a lot from that experience. It was a tough experience, but a very interesting one and enlightening one. And one of the main things I learned was there are a lot of lonely people out there who would love to have intimate, close relationships and don't have one, don't have a single. And so they were literally calling a hotline to speak to a stranger that they don't know to hopefully help persuade them to not kill themselves. Like that, I mean, that's powerful. Like the need and that conversation helped that person be like, no, man, you've got worth. Like you can get through these things. So that distant intimacy from a phone call from a stranger, just hearing another human voice, simply listen most of the time. It's not like we were offering any crazy solutions or strategizing on their behalf, just listening mostly. That helped somebody decide to stay on planet Earth another day.
Do you think that, to me, for some reason, I think, man, one of the core elements of that is like a need to be understood.
Oh, yeah. A need to be heard. And understood.
Yeah, I think the understood to me is more of the soothing piece of that. Because I can explain myself to anyone and they can let me know that they hear me. But to say that they understand me is a further step beyond that. And then I think even a step beyond that is when they say, me too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to talk about what is loneliness? It's when you feel like you are alone. And whenever you're able to communicate thoughts, feelings, emotions, vulnerabilities, strengths, things like that to someone, and you make a connection where they say, me too, there goes that loneliness.
Yep.
You are now with someone who is like you in that way. And there's something soothing about that.
Yeah, soothing is a good word. It's all about closeness. It's about connection.
Which is interesting how we crave that as humans.
Well, I think that's one of the core things that makes us human and our ability to tell stories around that need or to hide that need. You know?
It's funny. It's funny to me because we talk about you use the word connection. And oftentimes I hear that word in the business world with LinkedIn, connect. They've got the connect button. Oh, connect with this person. And in social media too, same thing, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that is social media. It's business.
To me, that is just the most like...
The opposite of intimacy.
Yeah, it's the most surface level.
Well, it's utilitarian.
Yeah.
The messages I get from folks, hey, just surfing profiles, came across yours, would love to sit down and pick your brain and learn more about your business. Like it's just like they're trying to use what they think is intimacy to make a connection. And to me, it's the exact opposite. It couldn't be further from intimacy.
Yeah.
Well, intimacy, this is an interesting one. I'll go off a little further. You mentioned the idea of loneliness. So anyone that knows me well, especially my wife and kids, they know I can get hangry, you know, hungry, angry, and it doesn't bring out the best in me. And so I'm pretty self-aware of that. My wife's very self-aware of that on my behalf and make sure I'm fed, so to speak. But I had a realization yesterday when I was a bit hangry, but I removed myself from the house to go get food so that I wasn't a jerk to anyone. So, that, you know, it's a better step, but I'd rather not have the feeling at all. But it hit me. What if it's not because I'm hungry or kind of angry? But there's an acronym in therapy groups called HALT that stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. What if it's because I'm lonely? And I thought, I did a lot of work yesterday in isolation. And I don't like that. I like to be around folks. I like to even go to an office setting and not even talk to anybody, but just to be around other people. I always have music on in the house or like working at a coffee shop. And yesterday I did, thinking back, I did a lot of work kind of in the quiet, in silence. And I was thinking, I'm going to start paying more attention to what we thought was hangry and see if it's more because I was lonely.
Where did you hear HALT?
I heard it around the AA tables, but it's huge. It's, you know, oh, HALT, stop right there. You're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Quit being an asshole. Back up. Pause yourself. Which one of them is causing it?
You know what's so obviously, with hungry, angry, and tired, those are feelings. I look at my kids, and they don't know how to recognize any of those even.
Right.
But as adults, you know when you're hungry.
Right.
You know when you're tired. Those are the two that are like the most
ubiquitous. And
those two, adults, if they're hungry or tired, they are able to recognize those things. And then angry is a little more subtle, right? I think there are people out there who are angry, harboring anger, some low level of it, and they don't realize it. But like, you know, whenever they have blow up anger incidents, it's really obvious to everyone
once
involved.
You get to the aftermath or the whirlwind, yes.
So that one is a little more nuanced in that, like, if you're dealing with an underlying frustration that you might be in a state of anger all the time and not realize it, but then it does become obvious when it blows up in instances.
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American furniture retail experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is, these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options, or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power. Because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years. So you don't want to go too trendy. But it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some, like, right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors are become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayses that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported, and nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American-made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish because, one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, we can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on millerfurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor Zach and Dave here on Life Lab.
But lonely.
Yeah.
That one is hard right? to recognize.
Because no one wants to be lonely. And again, I think I mentioned this, but COVID, one of the gifts that COVID gave me personally, lessons I learned, I guess, is there's a difference between loneliness and solitude. Loneliness is that I need intimacy. I crave intimacy. I haven't had it. I need social connection. I need to hear a friend's voice or be in person and see somebody.
I need to be understood.
Yes. Or at least heard. Solitude is, hey, I'm alone, but I'm being productive. I'm getting something done, and I need to embrace the quiet, the serenity, the silence. So for me, it's like solitude, positive meaning for me personally. Loneliness, very negative. Doesn't help me at all. mm-hmm. puts me in a bad spot, probably actually makes me defensive, probably feeds that inner bad wolf. We've got the white wolf and dark wolf, makes me maybe start seeing the flaws in others because I start to feel self-conscious. I don't know, but it's not good.
Yeah, in the past you've talked about things that give energy and things that take energy. And you're making me realize that in party situations and in like conference situations, sometimes I have a tendency to go deep in conversation too quick.
Real deep.
And the and I'm thinking through that now, and I'm coming to an understanding, and that's because I'm trying to connect. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to actually connect. I'm not trying to do the vanity connection, you know, bullshit that yeah. I think that most people do, where they find some surface level thing to talk about. They don't, none of them ever show their real cards. They never right. show their real self. Where, like, if somebody asks me a question in one of those situations and I feel there's nothing to lose, that I got to qualify that, right? If it's especially in business where there's money involved or something like that, if I feel like there's something to lose, I'm not going to show those cards most times because I don't want to put the other person off, right? I don't want to like expose something and then not reciprocate, or expose something and then say, well, I just feel exactly the opposite, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Because then, right. then you got to deal with the ramifications of that in that relationship. And I also realize like that's not really what I want out of the situation. But if it's someone where it's like, I don't know you from Adam, and yeah, you want to talk about UFOs? You want to talk about aliens? All mm-hmm. right, let's do this. Here's right. what I think.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm not afraid. I don't know why I'm not afraid of them thinking of me as weird or whatever. I guess because of the ramifications are like, this is probably a short-term transaction anyway.
Right. Low risk.
But on those where they like either agree or disagree or whatever, it's gives me energy. It's more fun. I have an opportunity at least to connect with someone on something at a deeper level than yep. what's the weather or how are you doing.
It's interesting because you're talking about kind of intimacy in professional settings, you personally trying to cultivate it. But conference planners, that's their goal. They want to create intimacy. They never say that, but that's exactly, it's about connection, closeness, opportunities for real conversations. And I think they're always fighting a losing battle. No matter if they create lush velvet chairs and leather couches, or the whale, the VIP room with beautiful food, you can set up these settings. And I do think there's utility there, but it also takes people bumping into each other and willing to have small, medium, and deep talk more quickly.
Yeah, you're right.
But certain settings might allow for that a little more easily. I just went so at the Bitcoin conference this year, they had this whole networking app thing. So you're supposed to wear these badges and then, oh, hey, I met Dave and he's interesting. Let me scan your QR code and then I'll pick a time to – like to me, that's just so opposite of intimacy. But that's what they were trying to create. Mm-hmm. Let's find time to be intimate. Does 15 minutes work for you to get intimate? Like that's what they were going for.
Well, and I think it goes back to what – the reason I went down that rabbit hole was about giving energy or taking energy away. And like I just find if I'm in a – conference for, you know, 3-4 days in a row, that type of a setting, and it's all just like the struggling for small talk conversation, you know, keeping the mask on, so to speak, that sucks my energy. I don't know what it is, but it kills me. I will be so tired at the end of those days. I'm just done with stuff. Where it's quite the opposite. If I find someone that I can connect with, and the reason I threw out that crazy topic of UFOs or aliens or whatever, it could be anything that's quote unquote controversial, or you know, anything that carries like strong opinions, emotions. It could be spiritual. It could be anything. Yeah, anything that political, just stuff that people. Avoid,
yeah,
on purpose when they're doing the small talk thing.
Intimacy, if it's real, if it's authentic, because there can be fake intimacy, like in sales, people could use it as a tactic to just get the sale done. So that to me is a different type of intimacy. If we're talking organic, authentic intimacy, it must involve a degree of vulnerability.
Yeah, and I think you know what it just occurred to me. You know, me and my logic mind. Was like, why is it then that we connect on vulnerabilities And it's like the more abnormal, quote unquote, less accepted, quote unquote, the thing is, the better it is as a connection topic.
The more, because it's that sharedness of, wow, they're being really, they've taken off their mask, right? Personality, root word, persona, that means mask. They're taking off their mask, and there's some scars there, man. They got some warts. I've got some warts too. I'm going to share some of mine. Like, to me, it's more real, more authentic if it's not staged, right?
So I'm going to make two things up. No one's ever going to be like, you like it when it's 80 degrees out too and sunny?
Yeah.
Oh my God. We're the same in that way, right, man. Don't tell anybody.
Right.
I feel that same way too.
Exactly.
I feel such a deep connection with you, man. You love 80 degrees sunny weather. Oh, versus like you were abused when you were a child too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is what happened. Thank you for telling me that. I actually had this experience. Like people will connect on that. Why?
Right.
Why?
Here's an interesting one, because I am very open. I like creating opportunities for intimacy in conversations. And I think that's what you're doing at your conferences when you bring up some of those non-professional topics. Opportunity for intimacy. You're fishing and you're saying, hey, I'll go deep. And sometimes you don't catch and you move on. I was speaking at a very professional engagement with a group of business owners. And before the speech started, I was networking, just talking to folks. And one guy is what he would describe an open book. I am not kidding. Within 2 minutes of talking to this guy, he revealed that he had herpes. Yeah. Well, that was this time I got herpes. Blah, blah, blah. Clearly from the sexually transmitted one.
Right. And he wasn't.
Not holding anything back. Didn't skip a beat. And I just, cool, man. Like we just continued chatting and he talked about how that impacted his health and the business, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. That to me is somebody who probably in his mind was like, I'm being very open and intimate, but doesn't understand the social norms of the speed of disclosure and how that can actually put most people off.
Mm-hmm.
Now he just didn't know he was talking to a weirdo, and I was enthralled by that. I'm like, ooh, this guy goes deep fast. Like,
yep.
And he wasn't trying to sell me anything, clearly. He was just, I made him comfortable enough to where he said that very quickly, or that's just who he is, one of the two. But we had a great conversation. He does that to 9.9 out of 10 people, and they're just, they don't know what to do.
Most people can't.
That's too much
that.
Intimacy too quick. And I think that's a real thing as well.
Oh, it is. It definitely is. When I was talking about that, like, I'd have a tendency to go deep quick. Like, I'll throw feelers out there and I'll read social cues as to whether it'll go. You know what I mean?
Right.
And oftentimes it'll be where they throw a social cue out and I'll be like, all right. You want to do that? Here we go. You know, like, and then I'll see, like, if they did they really want to do that or not? And I can read social cues. Like, if they all of a sudden, like, clam up or they, you know, deflect or whatever, it's like, okay, fine. Not doing this with you. But it's cool because when you find one, you know what I mean? Where you find one that they're, like, willing to do that.
Interesting.
That's where you connect.
Because then we could interpret into small talk of weather, sports, where do you live around St. Louis kind of thing. We could interpret that as, that's my social cue to you. I don't want to talk.
Mm.
I want to stay surface level with you, man. I ain't going deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Could
right.
Be.
But, absolutely. Or it's just no effort into thinking and connecting. Right. So it could go either way on that. And I think it's probably more the latter.
Yeah.
But I know I've been in situations where somebody clearly has wanted to go deep and I just stay super high level.
Oh, yeah.
I am not getting intimate with
you. Well, there's that time. There are those times, too, where it's like I just don't feel like that or for whatever reason with this person I don't want to do it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you first hear the term intimacy, what pops into your head first? No self-censor.
I think about like physical touch and like kissing. Almost.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's physical intimacy and there's emotional intimacy and clearly social intimacy. And the social is probably tied to the emotional.
We've been talking about social intimacy.
Right. But there's physical is a huge part of it. And a lot of people go right to, you know, sex or.
Well, it's funny. Like
physical touching, kissing.
Touch is my love language.
Mm.
You know? So if anybody's who's read that book or is familiar with that.
Really? I didn't know that about you.
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
I would never guessed that.
It's not weird, I don't think, because I think it's because my parents are not afraid to hug. You know what I mean? Like we're huggers, we're whatever. And it's interesting because when we were doing research for this episode, I came across an article in a psychology journal that didn't go into this very much, but just one paragraph said this, that it is in, it's only in the last 20 years we recognize that infants need to be held and touched. We know that they cannot grow. They literally fail to thrive unless they experience physical and emotional closeness with another human being. And I was like, damn, touch is my love language. I resonate with that.
You better be a growing motherfucker.
Well, no, it's just like I probably got plenty of that as an infant. You know what I mean? And like maybe I even developed a dependency on it. Or maybe it's just in my personality. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that's cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the physical part, ooh, you have an intimate relationship. That means, oh, you're hooking up or
there's sex.
There's something beyond there's touch, just
or kiss.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like with me, the way I describe this with my kids, right? And when we talk about this connection, this need for connection with humans, to me, I think that this kind of drives some of my spiritual beliefs. Like I believe we're connected at a deeper level than we realize or recognize in this world. And I think that we struggle with the fact that we are less connected in this world than I think we naturally would or want to be. And the way I describe it to my kids is this. I'm like, Marin, when I hug you, I get you as close as I can to me, right? I hold you tight. I put my chest up against your chest and it feels good, but I want you even closer. Like I have this longing, this weird feeling that like, this is great. And this is fulfilling when I'm hugging you. But yeah, man, like if we could even get a little closer, it'd be better.
Hmm.
And that's this.
Well, clearly your love language is part of that.
That's part of me. That's part of my love language. You know what I mean? What's funny is like, I've talked to my kid. Obviously I've talked to Marin about that. I've talked to Dylan about that. It's not, I don't want to put that in them. You know what I mean? But like, I've explained that to them as part of like why I have the spiritual beliefs I have about us being connected in greater ways and stuff. And they seem to like innately understand it.
Interesting.
Like, it's not something I had to like explain deeply to them or them question. They just got it. So, yeah.
I think we've talked about how we're a bit odd in that we're 40-year-old men and we've got a big, wide circle of friends that we're lucky enough to have who are very open with one another and share a lot and are vulnerable. But if we're describing that to others, we're just like, yeah, man, we've got friends that we've had for 20 years, like 20 different guys. That's amazing. But what we really have is intimate relationships. But we would never describe it that way. And there's probably some gender stuff going on around that. But that's what it is. We are grown men with a huge circle of intimate relationships. Ours is deeply intimate, yours and mine. But I would never describe it that way to anyone else. And I don't know why, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you're right.
But I think because of that physical connotation, probably that's why.
Probably because of the connotation.
Yeah.
You don't say it's intimate, but but it is. It's like in our friend group, I would venture to guess, and this is just a hypothesis of mine, but I would venture to guess that even in the relationships with the people that we wouldn't consider to be the closest, we probably know quote-unquote intimate details about people more so than most friend groups just because of disclosure at the second and third degree.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a tendency for a more intimate friend group for that to exist. And whenever that exists, whether we know it or not, there's like some weird bonding that happens in that. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, obviously we think about the bonding that happens first degree, where you tell me something vulnerable about yourself and I reciprocate or convey understanding, boom, bonding. But like, I can just think of many times where friends of ours disclose something about another friend of ours. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know that, you know? But then I bond about it. Maybe I'll even follow up with them directly with a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I mean, I've hung out with other groups of people and I haven't observed them doing that in the way that our friend group has tended to as we've grown up. And maybe it's just because I haven't been there long enough or they were shielding because I'm an outsider. You know, that's possible too, but.
The first thing that popped in my head, my first note I wrote was privacy versus secrecy. Intimacy to me involves privacy. Privacy is something that you don't want the whole world to know. It's shared between a small group of people or two people, whatever. Secrecy is something you don't want anyone to know. And there's a huge difference there. And if you want to know that difference, you read The Cypherpunk's Manifesto by Eric Hughes.
It's I like that.
3-minute read about the difference between privacy and secrecy. So privacy is the ability to selectively reveal ourselves to others. And to me, that goes along with intimacy. When you establish that, you're both selectively revealing yourself, part of yourselves, to that other person. It creates that new bond. You mentioned the word bond, new closeness. My question or thought is, what about somebody like Tony Robbins, whose whole business is putting himself up on display and being very open and what he would label vulnerable and trying to be intimate with speaking to 10,000 people, lots of emotions, people are crying, they're talking about deep topics. Is that still intimacy?
Well, I wonder if it devalues those vulnerabilities.
Right, makes it a little more of a business for him. I don't know. He seems authentic, like looking at him.
Well, I mean,
but so do actors on stage.
It's almost like part of a vulnerability is knowing that privacy is a selective group, right? Like knowing that you are in the circle of trust,
right?
And I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier about connecting with someone. You're not going to connect with someone on something that is just surface, that everybody is would connect with, that isn't unique, that isn't scarce, or there's something to do with the size of that privacy group. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would say there are I would guarantee there are things about Tony Robbins that he doesn't reveal,
right? Of course,
on stage that are vulnerabilities. That had he not revealed the other vulnerabilities that he does on stage would probably be just at the same level, yeah. Right? But the fact that he didn't reveal them and he has a smaller group that he reveals them to,
right,
makes us feel like those are more real vulnerabilities,
yeah.
Valuable vulnerabilities. And,
interesting. Yeah.
And being in that smaller group of trust is more meaningful to us then.
We've focused on human relationships. What about intimate relationships with pets, animals, or AI?
Oh, man, I don't even know.
The movie Her.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real. Is it real intimacy? It's close. According to dictionary definition, it would be closeness, connection, even feelings of love. If the artificial intelligence – now, it can't – what can it reveal?
Mm-hmm.
Can AI have secrets? Well, I'm sure it eventually can.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's almost like – like empty calories or like junk food. It can be satisfying, but I don't know that it's nutritious. Do you get what I'm saying? For the soul?
I do, for us.
Yeah.
But what about for the person that doesn't need as much human connection and interaction?
Well, it's just like arguing like, well, hey, given those people, this type of food is better than none. You know what I mean? Like, sure, it's not like going to nourish them deeply, but they're not going to starve to death.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure. Sure, maybe it's better than nothing. But something to me about like shared experience, you know what I mean? Like that connection with someone. And AI and animals, I don't know that we can't gather shared experience to the same level,
right,
with them.
I 100% have an intimate relationship with my dog, with Baxter, yeah. Not with Maddie, not with the other one.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't know why, but it's there's just I don't have that deep a level of connection with her as I do with Baxter. And I know it because I just feel it. It's real. But to push back on your AI thing, I know I won't have that kind of relationship with one, or I can't envision myself. However, with a kid that's born in 10 years and grows up with the AI nanny, and maybe it's in a humanoid robot that looks super real, and you talk about shared experiences. Well, that AI knows every experience that this person's had and can stimulate emotions. I think it could create real.
It could. I'm just talking about now. So, like, what about like the movie Westworld?
Mm-hmm.
Or the show Westworld. So I don't want to ruin it for too many people.
Well, it's old.
Okay, the idea is that they're these robots and you can do whatever you want to them. You know what I mean? Like, because they're robots. They're not real people. So you can, you know, kill them or rape them or whatever it is you want to do. Doesn't matter. Those robots in that show then have that experience, right? And then they can bond with each other through shared experience. So I'm not saying like that can't happen in the future.
It's just not right now.
Yeah, I'm just saying like if you're on ChatGPT trying to search for shared experience, you're not going to get it. Like it might convey understanding.
Definitely not through ChatGPT.
Right. But here's the deal. Like even in the movie Her, she didn't have a body, you know, mm-hmm. She was just like his assistant that would talk to him in the same way that Siri or Alexa talks to you. Right. But she conveyed shared understanding and they had deep, meaningful conversations, long, deep, meaningful conversations.
Same as a phone call with a human.
Exactly. The same as a phone call with a human. And so there's just, I guess it's like there's a physical piece of these conveying of connection, conveying of understanding.
Can you have an intimate relationship with somebody in a hospital bed who can no longer talk or communicate? Can you have an intimate relationship with somebody who can no longer, they just can't talk, right? So, I mean, we could go down levels and find these tertiary things.
Yeah.
To me, it's just closeness. Like, I would label all of the things we've talked about as intimacy. Not necessarily for me, but for somebody
else,
for sure. No,
it all is. It all is. But also, it's like different levels.
Yeah,
100%. Like, I hear about, there are stories in movies about this a lot. And I hear about this a lot where it's like, oh, I just wish he would have told me this before he died.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always wonder.
Yeah.
I'll never know because he took that to the grave. And for me, that's foreign because part of my intimate relationships is that transparency, that sharing.
My kids will be saying, I wish he wouldn't have told me so much. I wish he would have taken that to the grave.
Right. Right. But you get what I'm saying,
yeah,
right? And
yeah.
So just because that detail was withheld and they wonder all the time, does that mean that there wasn't that connection or that understanding? No, there was. There was connection and understanding. It's just on a different level. And maybe it wasn't complete, or they feel it was incomplete because they feel that there's stuff that's missing. When you ask me the question, like, can you be intimate with someone who can't communicate or is stuck in a hospital bed or whatever? Like, yes, I absolutely think you can. However, you would always be wondering how they felt about this,
yeah,
or what they would think about that. And so I would feel like it would be intimate, but incomplete.
Can you be intimate with somebody that you love at a deep level, but don't like? Think of a family relationship where they just, politics has ripped them apart.
Yes.
Or whatever it is, whatever big topic, religion, politics, pick the name, the topic of the day.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Interesting. It's just like, you know, we can love people because we have shared experience, again, right? Like shared experience, shared origin, shared whatever it is that makes us connect with them and be close with them and know that they understand, you all understand each other. And on the same point, you could be like, but I would never pick them as a friend. You know what I mean? I don't like the way that they do this. I don't like their thought process around this. I don't like their opinions on this. Like, they would never be a friend. But yeah, but we're connected and we're so deep or whatever. I think there's people who grow apart in that way. You know what I mean? Like where they connected and love each other, but over time have new experiences and develop differing thoughts and opinions on major things and grow apart in that way. And then they just have to decide, you know, if they want each other in their lives more.
Makes sense. Well, I don't have anything else. We covered everything I wanted. What else you got, buddy?
I wanted to talk about relationships, this thing called BIDS.
Hmm.
Have you heard about this thing?
I don't think I have.
There's this doctor called Gottman, and I guess there was a big study that was done about happy couples and predictors of divorce. And the biggest thing that came back from this study, and apparently this was like a big, legit, over a long, long time study.
Longitudinal.
Was that there are like what you said, fishing for connection, right? Like there are these bids, and the biggest predictor of connection is how often those bids are recognized and returned positively instead of like turned to instead of turned away from. So for example, you can do bids that are verbal, like, hey, you want to go get coffee this week. You know what I mean? So that, and those are clear, right? But, or, hey, could you do this for me? Those are clear, right? That's a clear bid. You're asking for something. You're asking for recognition, right? Like, and it could be anything from a couple like, oh, can you give me a back rub? Can you scratch my back?
I've got this one. Whatever. Kizzy had a call with whatever, some customer service person. And she's like, man, that was a difficult call. And she's throwing it out, and I could have taken it in different directions. I could have responded nothing. I could have asked a question, been empathetic, said deal with it. You know, that's a bid.
That's a great bid. Yeah, that's a great example.
Because you
can
go all kinds of ways with it.
Because she wasn't being specific about what she wanted from
you. Wasn't asking for help or a problem to be solved.
Right.
But I get those bids all day.
Yeah. And from couples give those back and forth.
Right.
All day. And so what they said was the biggest predictor of relationship longevity is how those bids are handled. They could just sit and observe couples and observe the bids going back and forth. And if it's funny because here's the order in which they found, which is a little bit counterintuitive. Positive response to a bid. So you latching on to that and being like, oh, really? Like, tell me about that, right? That's obviously the best. But then you being like, well, you know, you're pretty difficult too sometimes, Kizzy, you know, like a negative response to the bid actually was the second.
Hmm.
And the worst was ignoring the bid.
That's the worst thing we can do to humans is ignore each other.
And so they found the ones where they were ignoring the most bids, and they even figured out what the ratio was. You can go read about this. Just Google Gottman, you know, happy couples or divorce predictor or something. But they even got it down to ratios where the amount of bids that were ignored, they'd be like, well, they're getting divorced. And it was like scary accurate after so many years.
That's crazy.
Isn't it nuts? And so I wanted to talk about that because the idea of bids, because there's verbal bids like we talked about, but there's also like nonverbal bids, right?
Yeah, I would say the majority of my what he calls bids are done nonverbally, at least in my house. Hmm. Like they know – they have options for how to respond to dad just without me having to say anything.
It's a glare, mm-hmm. right? It's
my breathing, my sighing,
yep.
my instant walk away into the other room.
Yeah, yes, all of those are. The way that this categorizes them is you've got affectionate touching, like a back slap, a handshake, a pat, squeeze, kiss, hug, shoulder rub. Facial expressions, a smile, blowing a kiss, rolling your eyes. Playful touching, tickling, bopping, wrestling, dancing, a gentle bump or shove, affiliating gestures like opening a door, offering a place to sit, pulling out a chair, handing a utensil, pointing out a shared activity or interest.
I mean, all of this stuff, this whole study is just interpersonal communication, which was not my field, but the field that I came from, communication
studies.
And
it's just giving a label to it, right?
Yeah. Well, they're just calling it something different than all the interpersonal researchers would, but I just say yes.
Yep. Anyway, I wanted to bring that up because I was like, oh, man, that's really powerful because, well, obviously, interpersonal communication is powerful, but it's a way to simplify that because that's a very complicated field of study, and there's meaning to body language, and you can dissect any one of those things and go deep into it.
Yeah.
But if you just recognize at surface level bids that people are giving you and you are conscientious about it and know that the way that you are responding, do it with intention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Catch yourself in the way you respond and do it with
intention. It's an opportunity for intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
Talking about how the worst thing to do is ignore, right? Being negative is actually better. Here's a great quote. There is no revenge like oblivion, for it is in the entombment of the unworthy, in the dust of their own nothingness, by Baltasar Gracian. The worst thing we can do to other people is to act like they don't exist, totally ignore them. That's why we put people who are already in prison in solitary confinement.
I was gonna say that.
Like, the worst thing we can do to our kids or to any intimate relationship is to just totally not respond, give no reaction, act like you didn't hear it. You're saying they're unworthy.
Yeah. Other than death, the worst thing was to be exiled.
Yep. Kick them out of the city.
Kick you out of our community. You're gone, man.
So think about that.
Yeah.
With your intimate relationships, where are you doing that? And I'll say with me and Kizzy, my wife, getting to expand our relationship from personal to professional now that she's working with me, I have to be very aware of the bids I'm offering and the bids I'm accepting, because we have very different natural drives around patience, formality, authority, dominance, extroversion. We're the exact opposite on a variety. So I really have to stretch out of who I am naturally if I want to connect with her in a way that she needs to. It's called the platinum rule. So in order to be intimate in a professional setting with her, I'm having to actually put on a mask that's not naturally me.
That's interesting. So how is it different than it would naturally be you in a professional setting?
I naturally want to be, I showed you how to do it once, figure it out. That's how I showed it to you. I walked you through it step by step. You have another question? Stupid question. Figure it out.
Right, right.
That's who I am. Like, right. I'd figure it out.
Right.
But that I need to put on the mask that is totally not me. Okay, what's your question? No problem. Okay, well, like I showed you in the video I gave you, you know. But that's establishing intimacy. But to establish it, I have to be fake.
Yeah, but I wonder if it is, man.
I don't know.
Because she's picking up on that.
Yeah. And this, I'm making this all up. This hasn't occurred.
I know.
But this would, I'm sure it will occur.
I'm putting myself in her chair and being like, I would feel that tension. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you of come course. Back and say, okay, well, here's the video blah, blah, blah. Like, I know you. I know that's not you. You get what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And it's almost like I just prefer you to be like, I told you this. Here's the video.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, she gets 6 months of dumb questions. That's how. that's it. And she knows that on January 1st, don't bring them to me. You're self-reliant, self-sufficient at that point. That's what we get.
That's good.
What else? Anything else on your end? That was a good study. Bids. I like the term bids.
Yeah, I guess I copied this. So here's the stats. Happy couples turn towards their partners approximately 20 times more than couples in distress during everyday non-conflict discussions. Newlyweds who were still married 6 years after their wedding had turned toward each other 86% of the time while being observed, and those that were divorced 6 years later had only turned toward each other 33% of the time.
Yeah, I call it the screen close. I have to close my screen.
Oh, that's good.
More importantly, I've had, and I'm not great at this. I'm good at that one. I'm good at a couple things, actually, but it's not because I'm naturally good. It's because I had to build myself what I call the mechanism. Prior to Kizzy working with me, when she would come home, I always said, please send me a text or a Vox as you're pulling up. And she did it religiously, consistently, so that as soon as I got that, I'd close my screen and I was up. I probably saw it in some dumb show, but I'd be up and I'd greet them at the door. The kids and her. And it'd be quick, hey, I'm still working on stuff, guys. Good to see you. Love you. And then I'd dive back in. So I got real good at that. Like, I never missed that.
I like it.
But what I wasn't good at, because I have a smaller house, I don't have a huge mansion like Dave, but and I'm I like to move around. He's got a good office at his house. I really don't. So I'll move around the house to work. So then I'm in their area. I'm in the kids' area. So I'm out. I'm working on the computer, and I might even have headphones on, but they're coming up to me. Mm. That's my fault because they're trying to be intimate. Mm-hmm. So that's a bad bid that I was doing. I need to be better. If I'm working at the house, the bid is dad's in his office. Don't run through it then.
I wonder what the science is on the, like, is there any value to just working where they're at? You know what I mean?
Well, that in my head, how I build it is, hey, I'm at least around them. But I personally believe it's worse. It's worse because it makes me have a bad reactivity. Reaction. Yeah. Well, no, it's worse because of how I'll react.
Well, I think of it as it's probably worse in both ways.
Both, yeah.
Yeah, because you're not really getting real
intimacy.
I'm
not focused on either one.
And you're also hurting your productivity probably.
Yeah. So that's one where I still have to work. And again, I'm not complaining. I'm very lucky that I can work from many different places, but that's something that's like, man, I wish I could be like Bill Murray in What About Bob and get up at his home office. He had a little clock in tool and hey, Gil, going to work. And he'd clock in and just turn because his apartment was tiny and he just literally swiveled around in his chair. This was pre-working from home and then he was at work. It was awesome.
That is awesome and prophetic.
Yes. Oh, and very prophetic.
Who knew? Who knew?
Well, I'm done, man, unless you got anything else.
No, I don't think so. This is I think we hit some powerful
stuff. We need change
stuff.
Challenges. I've got one, so while I'm doing mine, if you want to think of one.
All right, you do yours.
Mine are two, but they're very brief. I think you could accomplish them both in 5 minutes. So give yourself 5 minutes. Invest 5 minutes in your own intimacy. One, think about that HALT acronym, H-A-L-T. I love it because each letter has a meaning, but also just the word. It means stop. When you start feeling poorly, angry, upset, frustrated, hurried, stop yourself because it's probably tied to somebody that you have an intimate relationship with. And think about, am I hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? Because it's going to be one of those four. So think about HALT and where you need to embrace the message of that acronym most often. Could be at home, could be at work. Second one, think about your top three most intimate relationships. And just think about it. Like, think about it with the bids. You know, think about it in terms of just overall, like, wow, how lucky. Gratitude. I'm lucky. Just spend, there's nothing you need to think about. Just who are my top three? Like, where am I most vulnerable? Who am I most close with? How much am I turning to them? Like, whatever you want to think about, but just spend some time thinking about the intimacy that you've developed because it is a gift. But that takes work. It's like giving someone a car. Hey, awesome gift, but now you got to keep it maintained, pay the insurance. Like, there's stuff you got to do. So just think through that and embrace it.
Okay, I have two. One is about something I was terrible at, and that's listening. I still work with it. I still have to work on it. I'm not saying I'm good at it. But there's an exercise. Zach said it's the close your screen moment. So that would be this change challenge. If someone throws you a bid, close your screen. If your phone is on the table, at least flip it over. I even saw something that said that there was a study that even your phone being off and turned over on the table between two people still lowers the perceived intimacy of the conversation. And so literally I will take it off the table and put it next to me on my chair.
Yep. Nice.
So that would be my number one change challenge, the screen close challenge. You get a bid, close your screen. Number two would be like bid tabulation, bid calculation. Right.
So bid analytics.
I just gave the numbers, right? Newlyweds who are married 6 years after their wedding had turned toward each other 86% of the time they were getting bids. Those who were divorced 6 years later only turned toward each other for 33% of the bids. Be conscious of the bids you are receiving and your response, positive or negative, or the worst is ignoring those bids and just be conscious of it.
Well, this has been a fun conversation. We've talked about a lot, multiple interpretations and layers of intimacy, from physical intimacy to emotional intimacy to social intimacy. It's all about closeness. It's about connection. I don't know if we mentioned this word. It's really about love at a deeper level. We don't think you can be intimate without also being vulnerable and taking off our masks. And there is a private aspect to intimacy where, you know, not everybody in the world needs to know about that interaction or conversation. But intimacy is core to who we are as humans, and we crave intimate relationships and conversations. So just make sure you're giving yourself the gift of having them. So as we like to say at Life Lab, experiment with life.